to the Epistle to the Romans. Romans and chapter 13. Romans chapter 13 and verse 1. Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power, resisteth the ordinance of God. And they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Wilt thou then not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same. For he is the minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid, for he beareth not the sword in vain. For he is the minister of God, a revenger, to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. Wherefore ye must needs be subject, not only for wrath, but also for conscience' sake. For this cause pay ye tribute also, for they are God's ministers, attending continually upon this very thing. Render therefore to all their dues, tribute to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honour to whom honour. The book of Proverbs and chapter 21. Proverbs chapter 21 and verse 1. The king's heart is in the hand of the Lord as the rivers of waters. He turneth it whithersoever he will. Just want to draw your attention to that word, whithersoever. The book of Daniel and chapter 2. Daniel chapter 2. And verse 36, this is the dream, and we will tell the interpretation thereof before the king. Thou, O king, art a king of kings, for the God of heaven hath given thee a kingdom, power, and strength, and glory. And wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the field and the fowls of the heaven hath he given into thine hand, and hath made thee ruler over them all. Thou art this head of gold. Note the word in verse 38, wheresoever. Chapter 4. And verse 17. This matter is by the decree of the watchers, and the demand by the word of the holy ones, to the intent that the living may know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomsoever he will, and setteth up over it the basest of men. Note the word whomsoever. And our final reading is in the book of the Acts and chapter 4. Acts chapter 4, and we'll pick up the reading at verse 23. And being let go, they went to their own company and reported all that the chief priests and elders had said unto them. And when they heard that, they lifted up their voice to God with one accord and said, Lord, thou art God, which hast made heaven and earth and the sea and all that in them is, who by the mouth of thy servant David hast said, why did the heathen rage and the people imagine vain things? The kings of the earth stood up and the rulers were gathered together against the Lord and against his Christ. For of a truth against thy holy child, perhaps better thy holy servant Jesus, whom thou hast anointed, both Herod and Pontius Pilate with the Gentiles and the people of Israel were gathered together for to do whatsoever thy hand and thy counsel determined before to be done. You'll note in verse 28, the word whatsoever. Now we look to the Lord for his blessing upon those readings. It might help if you actually had opened those verses in Romans chapter 13. Now, the 7th of May will soon be upon us, and we are left wondering, who will it be in number 10? Will it be Red Ed? Or perhaps it might be Dave. It may be that Nicola Sturgeon has the trump card. Or what about Nigel Farage? He may have something to say. And so, these questions may be in the minds of many. But then, questions often arise regarding the part, if any, which believers should take in politics, whether they should exercise their right to vote, and indeed regarding the wider issues of the believer's relationship to those in authority. I'm sure that many will appreciate that perhaps the key passage dealing with this subject in our New Testament is that passage in Romans chapter 13, those first 11 verses. But I would just remind you that the Apostle Peter also touches upon these things in the first epistle and chapter 2. And Paul, again, he gives a very brief instruction to Titus on the island of Crete along similar lines in the opening verses of chapter 3 of his epistle. Now, I would have liked to have dealt with this subject under three headings. I realize that we are limited for time, and I was told before the meeting that I always finish on time. Well, so that really puts extra pressure on me this afternoon. And so I would like to have dealt with the subject under three headings. We may have to limit it just to two headings. I want to think, first of all, of the powers that be. And then secondly, we must take account of the sovereignty of God. And then we may be able to make one or two comments on the third subject, and that is the believer's attitude. The powers that be, the sovereignty of God, and the believer's attitude. That expression, the powers that be, well, it's found in that passage in Romans chapter 13. Not the powers that we would like to be. Not those that we think ought to be, but those which actually be. And brethren, we must accept them irrespective of our estimation of the character or situation of those who hold office, who by the very nature of things will never, never be perfect. And that expression, the powers that be, becomes all the more pointed when we remember that when Paul was writing, these powers were headed by the cruel Nero. But we do need to bear in mind that although these powers rule, God himself overrules. And we have that expression that we find in that messianic psalm, Psalm 22, that he is the governor among the nations. Or perhaps as the Revised Version says, he is the ruler over the nations. Now, if you do have those verses open before you in Romans chapter 13, I want you to notice the emphasis which the passage before us places upon the fact that the powers are ordained of God. Notice verse 1, no power but of God. Again, verse 1, ordained of God. Verse 2, the ordinance of God. Verse 4, twice over we read minister of God. And in fact, in that verse, it is that word diakonos, which simply means a servant. But then we have, again in verse 6, God's ministers. And it's a different word that's employed there. It's the word that means a public servant appointed for any civil or religious type of work. So, within the space of those 6 verses, it is stated that the powers are, from different aspects, those powers are of God. But in this passage that we have read together, the purpose of these powers is clearly stated. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. If we were to turn over to the parallel passage in 1 Peter chapter 2, we would learn there that they are for the punishment of evildoers and for the praise of them that do well. So let us appreciate that rulers as a class are an agency on the side of right and order. That may seem difficult for us to accept. But nevertheless, civil authority, even in its most distorted forms, never systematically favours wrong as wrong and punishes right as right. Even in these early days, let us appreciate this, the persecution of Christians was aroused by motives which, though of course we appreciate, were mistaken, they had in view the preservation of civil order. So, we learn that the rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Then in verse 4, we are told that he, that is the individual, he is the minister of God to thee for good. So the service that he renders is for the welfare, the well-being of the subjects that are under him. And his rightful exercise of authority, under God of course, has in view its beneficial effects upon society in general. But then the third point, he bears the sword. So in verse 4, he beareth not the sword in vain. I understand that this word beareth is on some occasions translated weareth. And the Caesars appear to have literally worn a sword or a dagger as an emblem of imperial power. But we realize that the sword speaks of the power to inflict the death penalty. And so our verse says, he beareth not the sword in vain. In other words, it is for use, not for mere show, not for pageantry, but it's there for use. You will understand that when Adam was created, it was God's purpose that he should, within certain limits, have dominion. Let us make man in our image and let them have dominion. However, certainly after the flood, after the fall rather, dominion and power over human life was excluded, because you will recall that when Cain murdered Abel, God protected him. And we are told that the Lord set a mark upon Cain, lest any finding him should kill him. But nevertheless, after the flood, a further charge was given to the head of the race, namely Noah: whoso sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed. And this gave divine authority for the infliction by man of capital punishment. And so we read there in Genesis chapter 9, at the hand of every man's brother will I require the life of man. There are some here, I understand there's quite a few now who are over the age of 70, and I embrace myself in that. And you will remember the days when capital punishment was used in this country. But it was effectively abolished in this country in the 1960s. I think it remained for a while on the statute book for treason. But nevertheless, capital punishment was abolished. And in the intervening time, we're now talking the best part of 50 years, in that intervening time, there have been at least two occasions when there has been a free vote in the House of Commons for the reintroduction of hanging for certain types of crime. But of course, on each occasion, the motion was defeated. But I do want to emphasize this afternoon that abolition of the death penalty for murder, the abolition is unscriptural. And it is the outcome of the fallacy that this country can be governed by Christian principles, whereas Christianity is for Christians only. And the abolition of the death penalty is really the result on the part of many just to water down the true nature of sin and to remove from men the responsibility of their wrongdoings. It is interesting to note that when Christ himself establishes his millennial kingdom here upon earth, he will inflict the death penalty when it is merited. And so in that messianic passage in Isaiah and chapter 11, we read, "With the breath of his lips will he slay the wicked." So there we have a little brief survey of the powers that be. But I want now to direct your attention to the sovereignty of God. And I believe that this is brought out very clearly in the book of Daniel. We read that isolated verse from chapter 4. And chapter 4 of the book describes a vision which Nebuchadnezzar had, of which Daniel himself gives the interpretation. And the main lesson to be learned by the king was that whatever power he possessed, he would not have had if God had not given it to him. Consequently, there was no justification whatsoever for him to lift up his head in pride. And I would remind you of the words of the Lord Jesus to Pilate himself. It's recorded for us in John chapter 19, "Thou couldest have no power at all against me, except it were given thee from above." We didn't read all of the relevant verses in chapter 4, but had we gone on to take account of these further verses, we would have read that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men and giveth it, I pointed out this expression in verse 17, giveth it to whomsoever he will. And notice this, and setteth up over it the basest of men. Had we gone on to subsequent verses, we would have read the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men and giveth it to whomsoever he will. So the earlier verse, the verse that we read together, verse 17, it actually goes further than those subsequent verses, because we have those words, "and setteth up over it the basest of men." Now, this is no doubt an immediate reference to the humble origin of Nebuchadnezzar himself, but nevertheless, I believe that it's setting forth a general principle. And I pose the question, who would knowingly, among the people of God, vote for the basest of men? Now let's grasp hold of this. Not only has God decreed that there should be powers, but he has also determined which individuals should fill these roles. Thou, O King, art a King of kings, for the God of heaven hath given thee a kingdom, power, strength, and glory. I trust you're with me. The results of an election, whether that be a local election or a general election, the results of that election are not only known to God before the election takes place, but which party is to get in and to hold sway. Indeed, the very individuals who are to be elected are decided in heaven beforehand and not by the electorate at the time of voting. And so it's the council chamber of heaven and not the polling booth in your local constituency. That is where the issue is decided. We read an earlier verse in Daniel chapter 2, and that verse shows the geographical limits of the authority of the powers that be. They are also ordained by God. We read that expression, wheresoever the children of men dwell. Now, it may be somewhat disturbing to ourselves as the people of God, as we see what we regard as evil powers exercising sway over vast populations and areas of the earth. However, many of us here can just go back to the time when the Soviet Union, which we thought would exist forever, it crumbled, and it was a surprise to many. And that really has demonstrated the truth of the verse that we read together from the book of Proverbs, the king's heart is in the hand of the Lord as the rivers of waters, he turneth it whithersoever he will. Not as we will, but as he will. Then again, we read those verses in Acts chapter 4. And as the company of believers lifted up their voice to God with one accord, they said, of a truth, against thy holy child, against thy holy servant, Jesus, whom thou hast anointed, both Herod and Pontius Pilate, notice, with the Gentiles and the people of Israel, were gathered together for to do whatsoever thy hand and thy counsel determined before to be done. So the whole position, brethren, is really summarized by the whomsoever of Daniel chapter 4, the wheresoever of Daniel chapter 2, the whithersoever of Proverbs chapter 21, and the whatsoever of Acts chapter 4. And however chaotic things may appear to be, we can truly say that they are never out of hand. You'll notice that we have that expression in Proverbs chapter 21, the hand of the Lord. And then again, in Acts chapter 4, whatsoever thy hand and thy counsel determined before to be done. So however chaotic things may appear to be, they are never out of hand. And history abounds with examples of how the basest of men, that expression we read in Daniel chapter 4, to whom believers could never think of giving their moral support to get them into power, they have actually been used by God for the furtherance of his purpose. Indeed, they have been used for the good of his own people. So Nebuchadnezzar, he was used to chastise God's people, and he was used to usher in the times of the Gentiles. And the rulers that are mentioned in the prayer of God's people recorded in Acts chapter 4. They were indeed God's instruments. You see, what they did willingly, but nevertheless, they were unwittingly carrying out the will of God. So, we are informed that in a future day, God will put it into the hearts of evil men and powers to fulfill his will. And in Revelation chapter 17, where we read of the destruction of religious Babylon, we find that God has put in their hearts to fulfill his will. Now, we have just got a little time just to consider what our attitude should be in these circumstances. The Word of God gives us counsel on all the legitimate relationships of life. We have wives and husbands, children and parents, servants and master. And also it gives us instructions and counsel as to how we should conduct ourselves as subjects. I'm using that word deliberately. Not as citizens, because our citizenship is in heaven. There are no instructions given to believers as to how they should act as politicians, or even magistrates, or even rulers. Those instructions are not given to us in our New Testament. But the first point that I want to emphasize this afternoon is that, what is our attitude? We are to be in subjection to the powers that be. So I emphasize, we're not viewed as citizens, but we are rather viewed as subjects. So we come back to our passage in Romans chapter 13, let every soul be subject unto the higher powers. In Titus chapter 3, put them in mind to be subject to principalities and powers, to obey magistrates. And again back in Romans chapter 13, wherefore ye must needs be subject, not only for wrath, but also for conscience' sake. Let's examine those expressions. Ye must needs be subject, not only for wrath, but also for conscience' sake. The former, of course, not only for wrath, the former is external. In other words, the execution of wrath on the part of the ruler. But the latter is internal. It's a matter of conscience towards God and the recognition of the right that the ruler has. We are ever, brethren, directed to view earthly relationships and earthly circumstances in the light of our relationships with God. We have a further idea brought before us in the parallel passage in 1 Peter chapter 2. Peter says, submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake. So the exhortation is to submit to every human institution, to every office or authority which men have established. But you will note the motive here. It is for the Lord's sake. In other words, not to bring discredit upon him, not to bring discredit upon his teaching. And so it's quite clear that we, as believers in the Lord Jesus, in this present day, we are to be subject to every human ordinance, save where such would cut across the revealed mind and will of God. I don't know whether you've seen these signs as you've been driving. It's a circle, and it says 3-0. Have you ever seen that? Message through, right? Anyway, we apply that principle unless we ought to obey God rather than men. What would be examples where we do not submit to rules and regulations? Well, an example would be if we were actually forbidden to preach the gospel. Now, I realize that some limitations may be imposed upon us if we want to proclaim the gospel in the open air. We, in Leicester, we go down to the city center, but we do get permission from the local council and also from the police in order to carry out that exercise. But supposing we were forbidden, supposing there was somebody at the door forbidding us to preach the gospel, then we still preach the gospel. It may be that some edict is sent forth telling us to corrupt our worship. Well, we cannot submit to that. It may be that there is a requirement for us to adulterate the faith. Well, we cannot do that. The faith, once and for all, delivered unto the saints. And it could possibly be that a decree would go forth requiring us to do what is morally evil. Well, we could not submit to that. And in those circumstances, we ought to obey God rather than men. Now, it's quite clear that our subjection and our obedience to the powers that be will involve rendering, I'm coming now back to the passage in Romans chapter 13, rendering to all their dues. Remember, the Lord himself could teach, render therefore unto Caesar the things which are Caesar's. Tribute to whom tribute is due. So that would be a tax on persons and property. Well, it would involve our present day income tax, and it would embrace the council charge. It would also involve death duties. Well, the individual concerned is not so worried after he's passed away about paying death duties, but the family might have to have some worries about the same. Incidentally, whilst I'm thinking about that, you know, there are those who have every intention when they pass from this scene of giving a certain portion of their inheritance to the Lord's work. Well, that may seem, you know, very noteworthy. But I just want to remind you that you won't get any credit for it at the judgment seat of Christ. It's the things that are done in the body. The sacrifice needs to be made now. I can tell you this. I must have said it about 20 years ago in a particular meeting. And a brother in the meeting, I learnt this after he was called home. After many years, I was told that a brother in the meeting said, "You know, Brother West has been very hard on us this afternoon." Anyway, this brother's conscience, it started working. And apparently, he gave £1,000 to the assembly as a result of that ministry. We look for results from our ministry. He had been called home, and I know the person involved, but after that, he'd already been called home. But there we are. But death duties would have to be paid. And then it says, custom to whom custom. And that would be a toll on goods. And of course, we pay the present value added tax at various rates, and we just wonder whether it will increase with the new parliament. Now, we must pay our taxes. Now, I know there's a lot of conversation, a lot of publicity about tax avoidance and trying to just get round things. Well, we just must submit. We must pay our taxes, even though we may know that the money is spent wholly or partly on objects which do not command our sympathy. Or they may actually be wrong or at least unwise. And it would appear from the reading of the closing verses of Matthew chapter 17 that the Lord himself paid taxes, even though the money went towards the maintenance of the Roman yoke. Now, the way in which that money is spent is the responsibility of the powers that be, and they will have to give an account to God for this. Verse 6 of our present chapter, and I'm keeping my eye on the time, "For this cause pay ye tribute also to God's officers." Now, it's certainly not becoming for a Christian to grumble, to complain about paying taxes or the council tax, or to put off paying to the very last minute what is due. The believer should surely not be amongst the last to render that which is due. And attempted evasion of payment of what is due to the revenue authorities by a Christian, well, I can only say it is utterly disgraceful. I just move on because there's one other point that I want to mention. We should pray for the powers that be. "I exhort, therefore, that first of all, supplications, prayers, intercession, and giving of thanks be made for all men, for kings, and for all that are in authority." We certainly, at York Street, in recent weeks, we have certainly been praying about the outcome of this forthcoming general election. We just leave the matter in the hand of God. And the result of such praying, what is the result? Well, that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and honesty. Now, we've had to curtail that line of things, but nevertheless, let us give careful attention to the powers that be. Let us bear in mind the sovereignty of God and also take account of our attitude and our responsibilities toward those who are in positions of authority. We trust the Lord will bless his word to our hearts. Now shall we pray?